So the second full day of the retreat is nearly finished, and with this, the retreat is nearly half finished. And for some of you, this first half has probably gone quite quickly. And for some, no doubt, it's been a very long 2 days. And I think it can be helpful perhaps to reflect on what the sense is of the past 2 days. Has it felt like it's gone very quickly, or has it felt like a long 2 days with a lot of struggle? And then to just to notice that whatever the feeling of the past is or has been, however it's felt for the past 2 days, just to notice, to realize and to appreciate that however the past has felt, here we are right now. Just sitting here, still breathing, still thinking, still feeling, still hearing, heart still beating, still able to appreciate this moment. One person left a note for me and Peggy, and in the talk this evening, I'll read the note, and then I'd like to just offer a few reflections on it, and definitely not to give any answers or any solutions, but just to offer some reflections and possibly to raise some questions for each of you to look at in your own lives. And the note says, could you talk in one of the Dharma talks on the compromises one has to do while dealing with the intensive way of life in the West in comparison to leading a more relaxed life to progress easily in the Dharma? So this is a question regarding, I think, the integration of the practice, the integration of meditation into our daily lives. And another way of phrasing it is the way it came up for a couple of people yesterday is the apparent conflict or contradiction between a so-called spiritual life and our so-called physical or material life, our everyday life. And I must say, when I read this note, the very first thought that went through my mind was how fortunate for the person who wrote this to know of a relaxed life of progress easily in the Dharma. It's not like that for everyone. So, where to begin with this? The intense way of life in the West. First of all, when I think of the West, my own relationship to the West is Western Europe and North America. And certainly in Western Europe and in North America, in general, the way of life is intense. A lot of busyness, a lot of doing, a lot of pressure to do and to achieve, to accomplish, to get somewhere. And it's interesting to have this question posed in this way in Israel, because I must say I don't think of Israel as the West. I think of Israel as somewhere halfway between East and West, and it's quite lovely. to think of it that way. But what really strikes me here is my concept of the West being Western Europe and North America, and then to think of the intense way of life in the West, think of the intensity of life in Western Europe and North America. But then when I think of Israel, and I really don't know if I can even imagine the intensity that must be experienced here with the constant threat of bombs and death and war. And I can only try to imagine the pressure that must put on the being. And it's very hard for me to imagine what it would be to live under those conditions. And when I come to the retreats in Israel and I'm sitting here and I'm hearing all the restlessness and the fidgeting and the moving around and people getting up and walking out partway through the sittings, and I think, boy, in the West it's just not like this. And when I give some thought to the conditions here, I can only begin to imagine the pressures and the intensity. And I think it's a tremendous credit to each and every one of you to have spent 2 days here and to have the intention to spend 2.5 days more. It's not easy. And we can see that, we can see in this that the intense way of life in the West is not just in the daily life. The intensity of life comes with us wherever we are. It's having its impact. And when we're on retreat, although there may be a sense of a relaxed life for progress easily, relatively, yes, but I think we can see that the intensity and the pressures and the effects of daily life really are still with us. And it's really something. It takes a lot of commitment and a lot of courage to sit in stillness and in quietness and to really face that and to experience that. So I bow down to all of you. Last night in her talk, Peggy spoke a little bit about the background of this form of meditation and this form of retreat and how it comes out of a monastic system, a monastic tradition. And the practice evolving in that way out of the monastic system and then coming into this particular form for lay people is a very recent development, probably just in the last 50 or 60 years that this form of retreat has actually been used with lay people. So it's a very new form. And before that, the formal practice was more for monks and nuns, and it was in a monastic setting. And so the conditions were very different, and this last 50 or so years, with the practice being done more by lay people, and particularly more in the West, where there is this intensity of life, I think is quite a remarkable experiment. And I think we're all participating in this experiment, and I hope that the experiment will at some point to a resolution of this issue. The monastic system was set up by the Buddha to give support to the practice, to give ongoing support to the practice. And it was set up in a way that the practice was done under conditions of great simplicity, as Peggy referred to last night. A real simplicity of life. Although I certainly know a number of monks who have said to me that life in the monastery is not simple, that there is an intensity and a busyness, and many monks complain about not having enough time to do their meditation, being so busy with meetings and with dealing with visitors and with doing their laundry and all kinds of things. But relative to most of us, life in the monastery is simple. And it provides a real support for this kind of practice. And so in many ways, I think the practice really wasn't intended. It wasn't intended to provide a solution or a way of living in an intense and busy environment. It was intended to give support to a way of life which is based on renunciation. And the Buddha, I think, probably saw renunciation as a key to being free of dukkha. This word dukkha, I think you all, I know it's on the lists of words that you have, so I hope you've all read it and you're familiar with this word dukkha. And this word dukkha, I don't know what the translations in Hebrew on the list are, but this word dukkha means, in English, it's generally translated as suffering. And it's also translated as unsatisfactoriness. And more currently, it's translated as stress. And I think that translation of stress is one that we can all relate to. And the Buddha, I think, looked in his life, and the Buddha certainly lived a life of probably relative simplicity. He had lots of servants to do everything for him. He had beautiful palaces, and he had musicians and artists and dancers to entertain him, and he had the best food available, and probably what we would consider not a very stressful life. But nevertheless, he recognized that there was dukkha in his life. He recognized that there was unsatisfactoriness. And his spiritual search, his spiritual seeking, was to find a way of living without that stress, without that dukkha. And his solution was renunciation. And this term renunciation can be understood in different ways, and I'll go into that a little bit later. And so the way that the Buddha set up the practice and the teachings, I'm not so sure were actually intended to be applied to a busy, stressful, intense way of life. And the experiment that I think we're all participating in is to see if it can be applied in that situation. And I would say that so far there are many indications of success. There are also indications that maybe not so successful. And so I don't think there is an answer yet. And I think it's quite significant that we are making this attempt. So renunciation. Renunciation can be understood in a number of different ways. And the most obvious way, and when we think of the simplicity of living in a monastery, the most obvious understanding of renunciation would be simplicity, doing without, living without so many of the things, living without so many of the activities. And certainly in the monastic tradition, this is the situation, although I think it's changing, and we see more and more in the monasteries and the monks in Asia, more and more they're wearing big fancy watches and carrying fancy Nikon cameras and video, Sony video recorders, and I remember when I went to Thailand, my first night in Thailand, I was staying in this beautiful monastery just on the edge of Bangkok, and it was all lovely forest, and those of you who have been to Thailand are probably familiar with forest monasteries, and the houses are these wooden huts that the monks stay in are these wooden structures built up on stilts, and you go up a ladder, and they have thatch roofs, and very, very simple and very basic. And I'll never forget my first night. I went out in the evening. I went out for a walk through the village, and I came back into the monastery, and I went to the hut I was staying. I was sharing a hut with one of the monks. He was inside, and I was sleeping out on the porch, on the veranda. And I approached the hut, and I heard all this commotion coming from the hut, and I started wondering what's going on here, and I started walking up, climbing up the ladder, and I got up to the top and peeked over, and there's this mob of monks on the veranda, and they're all leaning, looking in the door of the kuti, and they're all very excited, and so I kind of crawled my way through and looked in, and they were watching Miss America pageant. So this is the simplicity, the renunciation of the monks' lives. Where was I? Thailand. So simplicity, so renunciation has this, can easily give this idea of doing without. And this really is a very supportive way of living. Having a simplicity of life really is supportive for progress in the Dharma, progress on the path. And of course we can question, what is progress? So coming into the West and into our stressful way of life, our stressful, busy, intense way of life, how can we bring renunciation into our lives? If we think of renunciation, another term that's commonly used for renunciation is letting go. Letting go. In our lives, in the West, can we let go? What can we let go of? How can we let go? And I think each one of us has to look in our lives, and if we're feeling a lot of intensity and a lot of pressure and a lot of stress and anxiety, I think it's necessary as a part of the practice to look at our lives and see, what am I holding on to? What am I holding on to that can and perhaps needs to be let go of, to be renounced? The Buddha, in his recognition of the fact of dukkha in his life, with his investigation, he came to the awareness, to the understanding that the cause of dukkha is not so much in the things, it's not so much in the life, but it's in the holding on to things, the grasping, the clinging, and the flip side of that, which is the aversion, the pushing away. And the Buddha recognized that in that is the stress. And so based on that comes the need for renunciation. And so it's important for each of us to look at our own stress, our own anxieties, our own pressures, and to see, is there something I'm holding on to? Is there something that needs to be let go of? Or is there something that I'm pushing away, that I need to allow for, that I need to give space for, to accept? we can look at our lives, and certainly I think most of us can see lots of things that we could easily, maybe not easily, but that we could do without. I mean, how many here have been to India or Thailand? How many have traveled? Quite a few. And how many things did you have when you were traveling in India relative to the number of things you have here? And of the things that you didn't have in India, how many of them do you really need? How many do we really need? And this is an area that we can look at and see, what am I holding on to? And what can I renounce? How can I simplify my life? How can I release myself from this intensity and this stress, the anxiety, the pressure, the tension? Sometimes it happens, and I can say this from my own experience, with the idea of renunciation, of letting go, and seeing renunciation in this way of getting rid of. Sometimes we can see renunciation in this way, and we can say, well, you know, I really don't need this, I don't need this, I don't need this, I don't need this, I don't need this. And we can get rid of it all. And so we can get rid of our home, get rid of our furniture, get rid of our clothing, and put everything into a little backpack, and off we go. And what often happens with that is that at some point, we start to feel a lack of something. We start to feel something is missing. There is something that is needed, or at least perceived to be needed. And very easily, we renounce, we get everything into one little backpack, and then slowly, slowly, we start adding. A backpack becomes a bigger backpack. And then it becomes a backpack plus another bag. And then it becomes a backpack plus another bag plus a bag that's in storage in Delhi. And a bag that's in storage in London. And the things that we need start to grow. And then, well, I need a home now. And it's quite interesting how in the absence, in the being without, we start to get a sense of what's really needed. And the difficulty is we get the sense of what's needed, and as we start adding, it becomes difficult to stop adding. And at some point, we realize, wait a minute, I'm right back where I started. And then it's okay, get rid of. And we can easily get into this swing, back and forth, and back and forth. And it happens not just with material things. This going back and forth and back and forth happens in so many different ways. Perhaps we see it right here in the meditation hall, in the retreat. Perhaps we see, oh, I'm not making enough effort. I have to try more. I'm just being too lazy. Put effort and effort and effort. Really get concentrated. And then we get tired. Start to feel pressure from the concentration. And, oh, I have to be more gentle. I have to relax. And then, okay, I'll just relax. And then, oh, a little more effort. And that swing back and forth. And just perhaps just reflect on, have you noticed in any way a swing back and forth? Maybe you notice it. Sometimes people say they notice it with the food. They decide at lunch one day, oh, I've been eating too much. I'm going to eat less today. and you know, I'm just going to eat a little bit, and then lunch is finished and feels good. Oh, good, I got by just eating a little bit, I'm not so tired, I'm more awake. And then by supper time, it's, oh, I'm feeling really hungry, and three bowls of soup. The swing, one extreme to another. The practice is the middle path, and the middle path really is a path of renunciation, of renouncing the extremes, of seeing the swings, seeing the tendency to move to the extremes, and renouncing that, letting go of the extremes and coming to the middle path. So we see that the doing without has value, but it also has limitations. Another way of regarding renunciation, and I think this probably has more relevance and more application to our way of living in the West, and that is to see renunciation as letting go, but letting go in the sense of not grasping. So not getting rid of, but not grasping, not holding on to. So really being aware of where we're holding on to something in the sense of identifying it as mine. This is mine. And that kind of holding, that identification with objects as mine, is a kind of holding so that when the object is lost or broken or stolen or whatever, I feel it. There's dukkha in that loss, because the identification, the grasping, has been strong. It's been mine, and I've lost something. And so perhaps we can see renunciation as seeing that relationship and letting go of that relationship, seeing objects as just objects, not mine. It's wonderful in Hindi, when they're talking about objects. So, for example, if I were talking about this, actually it's not mine, but I'll say this is my tape recorder. In English, I would say this is my tape recorder. In Hindi, the literal translation of what they would say is the tape recorder that's near me. Wonderful way of looking at objects, of relating to objects. Just cutting through that sense of ownership. And this is a kind of renunciation. And so looking in our lives and seeing where that sense of ownership, that sense of possession, is coming in. And we can look at that sense of ownership not just with things, we can also see it with people, our children. We can also see it much closer to home. How about our minds? How often do we talk about my mind? And as crazy as this mind is, and as busy as it is, and as uncontrollable as it is, I still try to believe that it's mine. I don't know why I would want to do that. But here it is, my mind is just so crazy. My mind is so busy. Why do I take ownership of it? It doesn't do what I want it to do. It has its own life. Why take ownership of it? Let it be. It's just the mind that's near me. Sometimes too near. It's the same way as the tape recorder is near me, the bells are near me. And this letting go, this non-grasping, this non-identifying as me, as mine, can be a tremendous liberation. Tremendous liberation. So watch through the day. Give attention. See where the sense of me and the sense of mine is coming in. What is it that I'm taking up as mine? What makes this tape recorder mine? What makes this mind mine? Give attention and see, where can the letting go be? Where can the renunciation be? So this way of viewing renunciation can also be very valuable. It can be very limited and very liberating. But I think it can also be limiting. I think it can also be limiting in the sense that we can get the idea, and I think this is very common in the West, and maybe particularly in California, the idea that we can have the practice, we can progress on the spiritual path, and we can also have all the things. And in that belief that I can have this and I can have this, maybe not the belief, but in the hope that I can have this and I can have this, there's bound to be a conflict. There's bound to be a conflict. Because one of the basic principles of the spiritual path is renunciation. And the very acquiring of things, the accumulation of things, the wanting to keep things, the reluctance to be without, is an indication of holding. So it raises the question, is it possible to have both? And I'm not sure that there's an answer, yes or no, to that. It may be that the two aren't so separate. It may be, and again, this is part of the experiment, it may be that the Dharma, the teachings, the practice can be brought into this life, into this intense life. But I wonder if it really is brought into this life, I wonder if the intensity is possible. I wonder if there would be an intensity. I wonder if the very perception of intensity and of busyness arises through not understanding, through not understanding the Dharma, through not understanding the nature of things. And in that lack of understanding, in that not understanding, or maybe not lack of understanding, but misunderstanding, maybe in the misunderstanding there is a grasping and an aversion which creates the stress, which creates the dukkha. And perhaps a deeper understanding of the nature of things can mean an ending of dukkha in whatever situation we're in. Perhaps a deeper understanding of the Dharma, of the teachings, of the nature of things will somehow almost automatically lead to a renunciation. And the experiment, I think, is for each one of us to come to some deeper understanding of the nature of things. And this is the spiritual path. The spiritual path, the path of insight, the path of understanding, is the path which gives the support, gives the conditions for a deeper understanding to come, a deeper understanding which allows us to see ourselves and to see life in a different way. To see that This isn't me. It's not mine. This mind isn't me. It's not mine. And to see the unsatisfactoriness of this mind, to see the unsatisfactoriness of the dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness of the intensity, and to see the impermanence of things, outer things and inner things, and come to know this, and to know this in a way that there's a depth of knowing that brings about a renunciation. Not a renunciation that's a doing, something I do. I'm going to get rid of this, or I'm going to let go of that. But a renunciation that's an undoing. It's kind of like when you touch something very hot. If you pick up something very hot, the instant you recognize the dukkha of it, in the instant of recognizing the pain and the suffering of it, there's a letting go. You don't have to do anything. It just happens. It's a natural response. To look in our lives and to see where is there dukkha, and to allow ourselves to know that, to experience that deeply enough that the letting go happens. To know the impermanence of things, to experience the impermanence of things deeply enough that there's a very immediate knowing that there is nothing solid, there's nothing permanent that I can hold on to. And to know deeply enough, it's not mine. It's not mine to hold on to. It's not mine to possess. The letting go happens. Not through action, but through non-doing. In the meditation, it's interesting to see here in the West, we put a lot of emphasis in the practice on non-effort, on gentleness, on relaxation, on friendliness, and on not doing, on allowing, on just being. And we do this because here in the West, we're all very skilled at doing. We're all very skilled at accomplishing, at achieving, at being busy, at living intense lives. We're very good at that. And an important part of the practice is learning to see and to know ourselves and to know life in a different way. And so as a support for that, we put emphasis on not doing, because we don't know how to do that very well. So we put emphasis on not doing. We put emphasis not on judging ourselves and criticizing ourselves. We're good at that. So we put emphasis on being kind to ourselves, learning what it means to be friendly to ourselves, to accept ourselves just as we are. And it's interesting that in Asia, where the people generally are quite relaxed and laid back, the teachers say, you have to make more effort. You have to work harder. And so it's the same with the Asians. The practice has to be to see things in a different way, to break the habits, to see through the tendencies of mind, and to see ourselves and to see the world in a different way. In a different way, I think that we have to, it's important for us to come to see is to see that these things aren't me, not mine. The objects aren't mine. The mind isn't me. The body isn't mine. It's just a body. It's just a mind. It happens to come together and I give it a name and it talks and it does all different things. That's all. And to see that the way that this body and this mind speaks and thinks and acts and all the things that it does in life are responses to and are dependent on other things that are happening. It's in relation to what other beings, people, are thinking and saying and doing. It's in response to and in relationship to what nature is doing. And to see this relationship, to see this interconnection in a way that there is a lessening, a decrease of this sense of me as being a separate, independent, special person at the center of the universe, and all of life is happening around me. And it's funny that each one of us is saying, no, I'm at the center and life is around me, and then another person, no, life's happening around me. And we perceive the world in that way, and we get into struggles. We get into conflict because, no, it's my world. It's all around me. No, it's my world. It's around me. And just to see how insane this is, and to see how dependent we are on one another, and how who we are, who each one of us is so dependent on who each other person is. And to really see this deeply enough that the conflict, the struggle, the claiming of me and mine can lessen. Maybe even go away. Maybe even just completely dissolve away. And in that seeing, in that understanding, in that knowing, there's a space for feeling connection, for knowing connection. There's a space for living with friendliness and kindness and caring and compassion. Because we know that other person isn't separate from me. I'm not separate from that other person. And I think to come to deep understanding of this, I think this is progress on the spiritual path. And to come to this understanding requires a tremendous amount of renunciation. And in turn, this understanding brings renunciation. And so the renunciation and the understanding, the renunciation and the wisdom, the renunciation and the insight go hand in hand, dependent, not separate. So on the retreat, as we've said, we have different tools, different methods, different forms, the whole form of the retreat, the different meditation methods. And it's not about the form, it's not about the method, the technique. These are just tools for helping us to really look within ourselves and to see where is the dukkha, where is the stress in my life, where is the suffering, where is the pain, and what's the cause of it? Where am I holding? Where am I pushing away? Where am I taking up this sense of me, of mine? And allowing for the renunciation, allowing for the letting go. And in that letting go, in that renunciation, in that ending of the holding, in that ending of the pushing away, is the ending of the dukkha. So looking in our lives, using the support of the retreat structure, the support of the form, of the techniques, and really making full use of this very precious and rare time here. the conditions we have to really look and see. It is so difficult to do in the intensity of our regular lives. But here we have an opportunity to just stop and to look and to allow ourselves to really experience, to come to know the dukkha and the ending of dukkha. And then we go back to our lives and we see. We pay attention. We be mindful. And we see, again, where is the dukkha? Where is the ending of it? And in this, perhaps, is the coming together of the spiritual and the material. And in this, perhaps, is the learning to deal with the intensive way of life in the West. Including a relaxed life to progress easily. So let's sit together quietly for a few minutes.